Angela Davis, one of the Black Panthers. She said, "I'm no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I'm changing the things I cannot accept."
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Call Her Madam podcast.
Hello. We are so excited to introduce to y'all Bella Angeliz Matias. She is running for New York City Council for District 32. I would try to introduce her, but it wouldn't do her any justice, so I'm just going to hand it off to Bella. And I know this episode, we have two Bellas, so it might be a little confusing, but we'll try to make it easy for you guys to listen. So Bella, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. Thank you guys for having me, first and foremost. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity, you know, to be on your podcast with you guys today. As she said, I'm Bella Angeliz Matias. I'm city council candidate for District 32 currently. And I'm a community organizer and activist. Wherever I see a need, I try to fill that. I mostly focus on, before running for city council, I mostly focused on educational workshops for the community, and then also giving back through different facets, everything from food distribution to, you know, school supplies and book giveaways, you know, things like that to just give back to the community. And like I said, other than that, we do a lot of educational workshops just to try and help the community elevate itself. And now I'm running for city council.
That sounds amazing. I love seeing people who are active in the community and engaged in helping one another run for office. I think that's beautiful rather than having people just funded by a bunch of corporate money and in it for power. So that being said, what made you decide to run for public office?
So, as I said, I've done a lot of community work, and all of it has been self-funded. So basically means comes out of my pocket. And I wanted to do something on a much larger scale. I wanted to be able to do things consistently, you know, not just pop up educational workshops or, you know, sporadic giveaways back to the community, but something that was going to be consistent, that was going to make, you know, a lasting impact on the people around me. So in order to do that, I knew that I was going to need a larger platform and, to be perfectly honest, like better funding, capital, something like that. So I started looking into, you know, how people can get funding for these types of things. And when you have a nonprofit, you know, you can go get grants and things like that. But the grants are given through the politicians. So I started getting involved in learning about politics and shaking hands with people and finding out, you know, okay, what's the right door to knock on to get the funding needed to get these things to the community that I want to on the scale that I want them to, not just a small scale of giving back, but a really large scale that I feel like would make a lasting impact. And I wound up working on some campaigns with people that was very successful. We had a few people elected, you know, so I've made some friends in the political realm. And actually I was approached to run myself, you know, and they're like, why don't you run? And you can be a council person and you can give back to the community that way. And I was like, that sounds amazing. And so I threw my hat into the ring this election. It just so happened that this year is what we call an open seat. So there are many city council people who are terming out. You know, they've already served their two terms. City council is a term limited position. So the district I happen to live in, you have to run where you live. I don't know, you know, for those in the audience that don't know, you are supposed to reside in the area that you're running. It doesn't always happen that way, but it's definitely preferred. And if you do get elected and you don't live in the district, you have 6 months to move into the district after being elected, but it's preferred that you live there. So anyways, I'm digressing, but the district I live in happens to be an open seat this year. So the person who was in there is terming out. And I said, you know, why not? If I want to give back to the community, I want to do for the community, I want to impact people's lives in a positive way, and the opportunity is there, take the shot.
I absolutely love that. We are all for term limits in this podcast at all levels of public office. So kind of like with that, something that you said was really interesting was that your background is mostly on community activism. And something right. that I just recently took a women in politics class this past semester. And throughout the course, we discussed how before really the 1992, which is like the first year of the women, a lot of women came into politics through activism and through public advocacy. But it was like following that through about like 2016, a lot of women came more of like what they call like the professional way of like similarly to men through like business, law, school, like they were professors, et cetera. But now we're actually seeing that they're work diverting back to how it was pre-1992. And a lot of women are coming into politics through community activism, like Cori Bush, for example. So you saying that, I was like, oh, that's like, you're a perfect example of that, how women, you know, we are seeing the impact of our community. We're seeing how there's so much that needs to be done. And right. like the only way it takes for really understand the issue is to be on the grounds and see the issue firsthand rather than through like other means. So I guess kind of with that, kind of what overall has been your main policy initiative? Like once you are in office, what's like the first thing that you're going to be advocating for once you step in?
Oh gosh. In my district, this district happens to be very fortunate. There's a lot of homeowners here. But in New York City as a whole, I just feel like housing is just such a tremendous issue. You know, there's no affordability anymore. I know you guys are based in DC, but the housing market in NYC is horrendous. A two-bedroom apartment is like $2,500 and up. It's absolutely insane. So I think that something needs to be done to rectify that, but it's going to be twofold. You know, in order to tackle that, it's going to be making sure that we have jobs that are providing wages where people can afford things. And also, you know, we need to find a way to kind of regulate the housing market. And, you know, landlords are going to hate hearing that, but it's really the reality. You know, people need a place to live. We don't have to necessarily put on the landlords. I don't have a problem personally, you know, with bringing back more vouchers. And I think that's something that needs to be done. So, you know, it's my belief that if people are working full time, there shouldn't be any reason why they can't afford to live in a decent home and not, you know, spend 3 weeks of their 1 month salary on it. That's insane. You know, people are scraping by. So I really believe that we need to go to an income-based housing system and not just for certain apartments, you know, not this lottery nonsense of, oh, 20% of these apartments are income-based. No, if you work full-time, then you should be able to afford a home and, you know, have leftover from your salary for other things. So I really think that the city needs to step in and start bringing back voucher programs and increasing that. So that way, you know, if you can't afford the rent, if your income dictates that you can only afford this percentage of the rent, then the city needs to step in and provide a voucher to provide the rest. So I feel like that would definitely be my largest push legislation wise. And then again, like I said, it's twofold. So we need to make sure the jobs are there. So definitely pushing to support unions all the way, prevailing wages. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the term prevailing wages, but just for, you know, your audience, it's just like a wage that's above like the minimum that provides a quality lifestyle, that provides affordability, you know, things of that nature. So I'm huge on supporting that. And I know you said one thing, but unfortunately those two kind of cusp on each other. You know, you can't talk about affordable housing without talking about what people are making. So for me, it's that. I would say that would be the largest push. And then after that would be education. But it's just that's the most immediate need that I see, you know, and then education of course is huge because we want the future for our children to be open to all the opportunities, but yeah.
And in the way,
no, go ahead, Ali.
I was gonna say, like, in the way, even like they all interconnect because, like, developing on like the housing market, having more like economic sources also brings more money back into the community and like benefits, like, even public school systems throughout New York. So it all kind of coincides of like increasing in one leads to like a chain effect of others, which I think a lot of people don't really realize. They're just like, oh, increasing minimum wage is like detrimental to like small businesses, big businesses, everybody. But then you don't see like the effect that it actually has back into your communities of like in the long run.
Exactly. Also, I personally have been homeless in high school for a few months, and that was something I went through, and it was because of a rent increase in my building. And so my mom and I were single mom, couldn't afford it. So we just had to find a new place, but we didn't have time in 30 days. So that caused us to be homeless for a few months. And that also takes such a mental health toll, on everyone, especially me. I was in high school, so it's my junior year. I'm supposed to be thinking about college, but here I am thinking right. about like, where am I going to stay tonight to sleep? And so I think that, just like you said, that's such an important pivotal first step, because that affects not only young people but older people, and it helps mental health. And that is, you know, it connects to gun violence, it connects to so many other issues. So housing is so incredibly important. So I love that. I think that's amazing. Is there anything else that you want to add for your platform that you'd love to work on when you get to, if you get elected or when you get elected?
Well, I just want to touch on something you said first, if I may. You know, I think it's so important that you mentioned the mental health aspect. You know, God, I can't even tell you how many of my college friends were going through college homeless. I mean, and we're, you know, CUNY students, by the way. So these are, you know, City University of New York students trying to make their way in the world, trying to build themselves up, trying to really, you know, establish a career for themselves and things like that. And a lot of them were sleeping in the school. That is tremendous, like a tremendous travesty. And it's just such a hardship on them. You know, here people are striving to get their education and they're sleeping in the school, you know, so things like this. And so mental health, it's really heavily connected to mental health. Think of what that does to someone. Think of what that does to their drive, to their ambition, to their ability to perform, you know, and even just overcrowding. You know, you have now apartments, it'll be like, so many roommates in one little apartment because it's the only way that they can afford it. And I don't think people even realize that overcrowding also has a big effect on mental health as well, because you have no privacy, you have no time to think, you have no peace of mind, you have no space, you have no quiet. And it's just such a huge effect. So I'm glad that you mentioned that mental health aspect, because I think a lot of people miss out on how that affects people and even children, you know, right? Like people, we think of like housing as an adult issue, but these adults have children. So, you know, they might have a parent who now can't afford their home, and nobody's thinking about the 5 or 6 year old going through that, or the high schooler going through that, you know, and it's such a taboo thing too. So when you're going through it, you don't want to talk about it because everyone's embarrassed. And the truth is, it shouldn't be an embarrassment. We need to do better as a society. We need to do better in providing affordable housing and providing good paying jobs and providing a quality education so people can get good paying jobs. And I think that's probably like the third biggest thing on my platform is education. I really want to add in new things to the educational system to prepare our students for the future that they're not getting now. So we're talking financial literacy. You know, people need to know how to save their money, how to invest, how to budget, how to build a portfolio, how to do these things, because wealthy people teach their children these things and they know how to do these things and they know how to make their money work for them and make money for them. You know, and that's a big barrier for people to elevate themselves when it comes to socioeconomic status. So financial literacy is a big one. Civic engagement, which is getting involved in community organizing and politics. A lot of people would love to get involved in community organizing and politics, and they don't know where to start. Or maybe it's never even occurred to them because they don't know anyone who's done that in their neighborhood. You know, you come from certain neighborhoods where that's not really a thing of people getting involved in that, especially low income areas. They've never met anyone who's ran for city council. They've never met anyone who's gone to business school or law school. So we need to present these opportunities to our youth so that they know that they're there and they exist. So civic engagement, that's something we want to add into the education system. And of course, STEM programs. That's really the future of a lot of jobs. There's so many jobs that are becoming obsolete now, but technology, programming, coding, that's going to be the future of many, many jobs. Even just, you know, video editing, graphic design. These are fields where you can get paid a great amount of money for, but you just need the skill set to do it. And the kids can learn it. They're tech savvy. They're ready.
Exactly. So, yeah. I just want to name drop, like, and let everyone know who's listening. I know this wonderful organization in New York City called Sparks Within Reach, which tutor young children and children in general who are students in high school, elementary school, middle school, and they're homeless in New York City. And so they literally provide lesson plans for them that they create themselves and match them with a personal tutor. And they're all like completely volunteer based. It's amazing. It's youth led. It was founded by young women in New York. So it's a fabulous organization. If anyone needs that service, reach out. Sparks Within Reach is amazing. But that being said, you talked a little bit about representation, and I think that's so important. So in your district, do you think that, you know, there has been enough representation that models your district in the city council position? And if not, how do you think that should change?
So unfortunately, absolutely not. So in District 32, we have never had a Latino elected, ever. So we could start there. And actually, I can take it a step further and say we've never had a person of color elected in District 32. And this is New York. You know, District 32 traditionally was a very Italian neighborhood for a long time. But that's changed dramatically. At this point, I believe we're at 52% Latino. And so to be in a district where, even though historically it was very Italian, with a couple of other nationalities mixed in, but majority Italian, but to be at a point where we're now 52% Latino, and yet we've never had a Latino council person or even a person of color elected to the city council is, I mean, you think about the lack of, you want to talk about lack of representation. It goes beyond lack of representation. It goes to lack of even diversity, right? Because we've never even had one, you know, let alone an amount of people of color or people who are Latino, Black, you know, Asian, whatever, let alone having that as a fair ratio of representation. We've never had it at all. So it's definitely a lack of representation. But I think it also comes to the fact that it is a changing demographic. You know, traditionally there weren't that many Latinos in this area. There weren't that many people of color in this area, Black, or if you want to say African-American. I know right now it's Black Lives Matter movement. So a lot of people have termed themselves Black instead of African-American, you know, so whichever term they feel comfortable with using, whether you want to say Black, African-American, but it's just never happened in this district. There's definitely a huge lack of representation, and we need to rectify that. You know, we need to step up to the plate as people of color, as African-Americans, as Latinos, as Asians, and we need to get involved, you know, to represent the needs and the issues of the people in the community that may or may not be addressed.
Exactly.
Being in a district where there's never been a Latin representative or a Black representative, you know, and also being a woman who is from New York, do you think kind of in that aspect, if these like obstacles, what people would perceive as obstacles really of being a woman would be more to your benefit, or has it proved to be like in an obstacle one way or another?
It's hard to answer that question because we don't know what the results of the election are. So we really will see how this plays out on election day. You know, there's definitely pros and cons to it, right? So let's think about the fact that we've never had a person of color elected in this district, right? We've never had a Latino, we've never had any of these things. So that right there says to me that there is a barrier to break, right? So there's resistance to having something new in this district. If there wasn't, we would have had it already, you know, especially being that, like I said, this district is, you know, approximately 52% Latino at this point. So why haven't we had this representation yet? There is resistance. There also is, you know, different factors at play. You know, different communities have different rates at which they participate in voting. You know, sometimes a lot of Latinos don't participate in voting, and it could be for many reasons. Maybe they're not a citizen. Maybe they're documented. Maybe they're not. You know, maybe there's a language barrier. Maybe they are citizens, but they immigrated from here and they haven't really fully integrated into, you know, the American way and voting and the system here. Maybe they just don't buy into politics. There's so many, you know, barriers that other communities may or may not face. You know what I mean? So it's just different variables. The positive side of it is that I've been, you know, trying to promote that as something to the people in this community who are people of color, who are African-American, Black, Latino, and telling them, look, we've never had a person of color in this seat. Let's make a change. Let's get out there and vote. It's about time that we've had representation. We can make history. And it's crazy, but I never anticipated that even entering the city council race. Actually, when I entered the city council race, I didn't even know that there had never been a Latino in this seat before. I didn't know that there had never been a person of color in this seat before. So finding that out was really mind-blowing for me, because it's like, wow, this is so much bigger than me. You know, this is something where we can really make history. We can really break a barrier here and bring something forth that has never been brought in this district. So for me, you know, that's kind of like a big push for me to pull people out to the polls, and hopefully that will motivate them, like, wow, we really need this change. Let's get out there and vote, you know. But again, we'll see on election day whether or not that holds enough weight, because there is resistance. Obviously, we've never had this before, so there's been a tradition where it seems to go a certain route. And we'll see what's going to be stronger, I guess, you know, like the resistance or the motivation to come out and make that change. And obviously I'm hoping that the motivation to come out and make that change will be stronger, and we'll see. And as far as the whole being a woman thing, that's always an obstacle. You know, I think as a woman, we face so many obstacles that nobody thinks of on a day-to-day basis, you know, everything from, you know, as severe as sexual harassment to as minor as just, and I say minor, but it's really not minor, as not being taken seriously, you know, exactly. And God forbid you're an attractive woman, you know, you're taken even less seriously. And nobody sees you as a potential business partner. They see you as a potential dating partner. Right. And these are huge, huge obstacles that are not just in politics, but they are in every single facet of a woman's life. I don't care what job you hold, you encounter that. And so that's just something that is an unfortunate part of being a woman that we can't escape, you know, until we really change the views of society, change the way that men see women, and change the way that we see ourselves, I guess, as well, you know, it's very hard. You really have to carry yourself in a different way to even be respected. And I try to tell men this all the time. I said, you guys don't have a clue what it's like, because we fight for our respect every day.
That's so true. That is so true. It is really tough. What would you say has been the most rewarding experience during your campaign or your run for office?
Most rewarding. Oh, well, right now that's easy. So that was making the ballot. So I don't know if you guys know about how familiar you guys are with the process of politics or how familiar your audience is. But for those of you who don't know, in order, you know, anyone can pretty much run for office. You know, you can file with Board of Elections. You can register as long as you have your treasurer and yourself. You can set up a committee and run for office. However, that doesn't guarantee you a spot on the ballot. So in order to get on the ballot, you need to get a certain number of signatures from residents who live in your community, registered voters from your party. And it is a grueling, grueling process. You only have a few weeks to do it. This year we had 3 weeks to collect approximately 1,000 signatures. And, you know, for those who may not think that sounds like a tremendous, you know, deal to overcome or a really difficult task, I will tell you, you know, we started out with, I believe, 7 or 8 candidates in this race. You know, I was one of 8 candidates. I'm now one of 5 because 3 of them already didn't make the ballot.
Wow. Yeah. It's really hard. It's super hard.
No, it's amazing. It's amazingly challenging. You know, you really have to have grit to get through it, especially mm-hmm. if you don't have, you know, large corporate funds or PACs or things like that. When you have the money, it's very easy. You know, they hire lots of staff. They spend tens of thousands of dollars, you know, to send out teams and teams and teams of people to collect signatures, and they can kind of sit back and just cash in, so to speak. But when you don't have that level of funding, you really got to get out there every single day and just knock on doors and knock on doors and introduce yourself and hand out your flyer and, you know, hope that people are willing to give you a chance and that they'll have the faith to, like, you know, just sign the paper and give you that shot. So you're really going door to door and really, like, I mean, it's a boots on the ground operation. So it was tough. It was strenuous. It was nerve wracking because, again, a lot of people, I mean, literally approximately half the people that registered made the ballot, just about, you know, I mean, it was 8. It's down to 5. So one more person would have been 50-50. It's not an easy thing to get on the ballot. So that in itself was a huge feat for me. You know, this is my first election. A lot of people have been doing this a lot longer than I have and didn't make ballot. A lot of people have, you know, been doing this a lot longer than I have and haven't gotten this far in this election. So yeah, just even just making the ballot was tremendous for me. And it's all been such a learning experience. I have to say that learning how to really run a campaign, I guess, you know what? I have to retract my statement. That's more rewarding. Learning how to run a campaign has been more rewarding than making the ballot. Ballot comes second because it was tough to make that and it was rewarding to do that, but you really learn how to run a campaign and you're never going to learn really until you do it yourself. So I really encourage people to jump in and try, because it's interesting in the world of politics. Nobody really wants to teach you, because then you're competition.
That's so, so true.
There's yeah. this like interesting, like unspoken dynamic in politics where really nobody wants to really teach you anything. They kind of just want you to help them in whatever to help them with. So whatever your designated task is for their campaign, they don't tell you the other underworkings or why this is doing like this or why this. They just give you your task and they want you to do your task, and that's pretty much it. There's very people who are willing to actually teach you how to run a campaign. So sometimes you just have to dive in and go for it. So yeah, that was the most rewarding thing, is learning how to run a campaign. And if God forbid I don't win, I will run again at some point, and I will definitely win.
Yes. And you can you can come back on and give us a crash course how to run a campaign
episode. I think that there should be a lot more of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. I really jumped into this. And I've been on certain campaigns and we've had successes and things like that, but you do not know all the ins and outs until you run one yourself. Absolutely. I think in order to break some of these barriers that I talked about, we need to start kind of educating our people on how to run a campaign, especially when we don't come from money. Can't just fund everything like this and hire people to go out and do everything and, you know, throw money at it. We really have to learn how to do this. So yeah. I would love
to. It should be, it shouldn't be me or you. It should be me and you. And that's exactly what you're saying. So that's so true.
Absolutely. There's room. There's lots.
So I guess kind of like our final question would be, if our audience here listening wants to get more involved with your campaign or help you in any way whatsoever, how should they go by doing that?
Well, there's always two routes you can do. One is volunteer, obviously. So if anyone is interested to come out and volunteer, door knocking, you know, handing out flyers, things like that. Because really, it's just about getting the word out, getting my name out there, getting my stance on the issues out there and things like that. So if anyone wants to come out and door knock and canvas with me, they can reach out to social media. All my social media is the same. It's all Bella Matias 2021. So everything is at Bella Matias 2021. If they can find me that way on Instagram, Facebook, any media platforms, even my email is bellamatias2021@gmail.com. Otherwise, you know, they can donate. I can give you guys the link to donate. If they're not available to volunteer, they can always throw a donation. Minimum donation is $10. So it's as simple as a $10 donation can help. And the city has a great matching funds program right now. So the city actually matches it 8-1. So where people might feel like, oh, $10 is not going to make a difference, $10 becomes like $80. So your $10 can make a difference. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, other things can help as well. You know, add me on social media, you know, share my page with your friends, share my posts, you know, anything to really just get the word out there, get my name out there, get my platform out there so people can see, you know, what it is we're trying to accomplish, what it is we're trying to do for the community, what is it we're fighting for and trying to build. And hopefully people can see that vision and believe in it and say, yeah, I like that. I want that too. Let's fight for that. Let's go out and vote. And, you know, that's really what it is. We're trying to get people to come out to the polls and vote on June 22nd. And that's probably the biggest important thing they can do. They can come out and vote on June 22nd if they live in the Queens area in District 32. Which
that's what I was about to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
So June 22nd, come out to vote. Come vote, please.
Yes, absolutely. And if you're in Queens, you'll fall into my district, District 32. If you're in Ozone Park, South Ozone Park, Woodhaven, Queens, Howard Beach, and parts of Far Rockaway as well. So it's a large district. So if you don't know your city council district, please go and find out. It's super easy. You can go online and literally type in find my city council district. And then you just, it'll take you to a webpage where you type in your address and it will tell you exactly what district you are. It's so important. And I just want to say this, guys, I know that was the last question, but I need to add this. It's so important that people know your city council person is the person who determines where the funding for your community goes. Okay. There's millions of dollars that they oversee, millions. So, you know, if your hospital needs renovations, the city council person determines if the money goes there towards that. If a school needs renovations, or if a new school needs to be built, if a park needs to be built, if a library needs to be renovated, and it goes beyond that. That's just the construction side of it, because there's different budgets that we have. We have some that's for, you know, buildings and renovations and roads and repairs like that. And then the other portion of our budget goes to non-for-profits and NGOs, non-governmental organizations. So if you have a nonprofit that you love that does great work giving back to the community through programming and coding workshops, or, you know, they do voter registration drives, or, you know, they do a food pantry that helps all the families in your neighborhood. You know, all these things are funded by your city council person. The grants that are given to those non-for-profit organizations are determined by your city council person. You know, so if they need a $50,000 grant, that's who they're getting it from. You know, so it's just so important. All the things that you want to see happen in your community, the funding is determined by your city council person. So please find out who that is. Find out what your district is and go out and vote. June 22nd is election day for everyone, not just for my district. It's the mayoral election. It is my primary. And I believe there are 34 open city council seats. So out of a total of 54 or 55 city council seats that we currently have. So it's more than half of the city council seats are currently being replaced with a new person because they're term limited, right? So it's super important for people to come out June 22nd. You're going to be voting for your New York City mayor. You're going to be voting for your city council person. And again, if people don't know how much this affects them, please find out, understand that whatever you want done in your community, you're going to see that based on your city council person, and hold them accountable. When they get into office, if you feel like they're not doing their job, call their office or go stop by their office. It's very easy. You can go online and Google exactly the phone number and the address. You can pop up over there and say, hey, listen, you know, this is the issue we're having in our community. You know, can I make an appointment? Who can I speak to get this rectified? You're their constituents. They want your vote again next year. Believe me, they want to get reelected. Well, not next year, but next term, excuse me. But they want to get reelected. They don't want their constituents to be pissed off. Put the pressure on them, you know. But if you don't get involved, you know, everybody wants to complain, but we can't complain if we're not doing anything. So please get involved. Go out and vote June 22nd. And again, if you guys want to get involved with my campaign, please feel free to reach out to me on any of my social media, at Bella Matias 2021. I'll be happy to have you guys come out with me and campaign, volunteer. And if you want to donate, I'll send you guys the link, and maybe you can share that with your audience somehow. The minimum donation is $10, and even $10 can help. That's it.
Well, you heard that, folks. On June 22nd, go make history and vote the first Latina woman to be your council, your city council member in District 32. Did I say that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Ooh, Bella Matias, let's go. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love to have you back anytime. And we wish you the best of luck in your election.
Thank you.
We are sending you all our love from DC.
And if you need any help, just let us know, and then we'll be there to support you. Yeah.
We got you.
Oh, thank you guys so much. It's a pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. And I love that it's two Latinas running the show.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah. And one of them shares my name, Bella. So,
yeah. Bella. And we're both originally from Florida, too. So it's, you know, we're cute.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I said, Mom, I am a rich man. You know, it's like I don't have to marry one.